Welcome back to another season of Remotely Speaking Up. Join me, Dr. Rochelle Haynes, and my special guests every week as we discuss how the way we work continues to change and how companies and their people can continue to thrive no matter where and how they work. For more on our podcast, be sure to follow us on Instagram at Remotely Speaking Up. Stay tuned for more. Welcome back to Remotely Speaking Up. And we are on season 4, as you know, and we have another wonderful guest with us this week. We have the amazing Erin Peters, and there's so much I can say about Erin. Hi, Erin. Say hi to our audience.
Hello. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm so happy to have you. And I'll just give you a little background about Erin. Erin is a retired digital nomad. She is Canadian originally, but she moved to London after selling everything and decided that she wants to live in Europe and wants to work in the way that she wants to work. And since then, Erin, you have been blazing a trail in the area of just future work trends and just using technology to help companies leverage their businesses and leverage different ways of working. So I'm going to turn it over to you because you can tell us a little bit more about what you've been doing and what's it been like for you, that transition to the UK. And then we'll get a bit more into what you've been observing about future work trends.
Absolutely. Well, and this is where I get to kind of be a bit of a hipster when it comes to the future of work stuff, because I actually think I've been like preaching the good word for a long time about remote work. I'm actually going on 15 years working remotely, 5 of which were being a digital nomad. So I was actually traveling full time, living out of a suitcase, didn't really have a home base other than like, thank you for my sister for letting me send mail to her. And then at that point I was going, I'm kind of tired of living out of a suitcase and want to have, you know, a home base and then travel to and from it rather than the home base being literally where the Wi-Fi connects and where I unpack my suitcase for a week. So that was kind of the journey of how I ended up here. But it ties very closely with a lot of my kind of work history as well. So I had the pleasure of working with Toptal and Dela and probably, you know, 20 some odd other freelance talent platforms at this point, and being able to travel around and seeing people working remotely, internationally, you know, all these different ways of being fractional versus in-house versus contractor. You know, it was just really interesting to see how people worked. And I think this is really what fueled my passion of sharing more stories and sharing more data in this space of how the way that we work around the world is changing and how fast it's all changing.
Yeah, that's amazing. And do I have it right when I read your profile that says that you've lived in 35 plus countries?
I'm 50 plus now. So, I mean, define live, not really sure. Because, I mean, there's a whole debate on digital nomadism and visas and this. I mean, digital nomad visas didn't exist when I was doing it. It's like pre-COVID.
So, you were groundbreaking at the time. You were groundbreaking and you didn't know.
Yes. And, you know, to be honest, the Wi-Fi kind of quality everywhere at that time, too, you could definitely tell that it wasn't built for digital nomads in certain places yet.
Yeah. I'm glad that that's changed. So what do you find now in your work? Because you call yourself a futurist, and I would definitely agree with that to describe you. What are some of the most recent, because we've been through the pandemic, we've come out on the other side, everyone has tried with working remotely, and we can say have become more open to the idea, let's say. But what have you observed in your work about the future trends that are shaping the world of work?
Absolutely. And truthfully, a lot of the kind of futurists or prediction makers are all talking about some of the same themes. So I don't think that we're going to see anything massively groundbreaking when it comes to stuff like remote working, for example, or hiring more freelancers. We're simply moving further down the adoption line. So where it seemed crazy to have a whole company just built of contractors maybe 5-6 years ago, or have a whole company with zero offices, that's actually like not so uncommon now. You hear about this story more and more. And so I think as we start going further down the adoption curve, we're just going to be hearing more stories about how to do it well and how to implement it and how to basically just change the way that we're working with contractors or in a remote environment. I think the one area where it's not simply getting deeper in the adoption curve is really AI. I know we're all sick of hearing about generative AI at the moment, but this is really where we're going to see the most amount of disruption and change when it comes to the future of work. And I think this is why we're all watching it so intently.
Yeah, absolutely. And we already see a lot of consultancies that have come up as a result of that, trying to help companies adjust to generative AI. Because I think from my conversations with companies and from my conversations with senior leaders, generative AI seems to still be just interpreted as chatbots and chat GPT. And that's like the bare beginning of leveraging generative AI.
Absolutely. And I think that's the biggest thing, right? Is,
Yes.
everyone thinks about ChatGPT, and that's such a small area of all the tools that are already available to people to use just by logging into a browser. And so if we think about the fact that there's stuff like Perplexity for research or Midjourney or all these other things that people just, maybe they haven't even used Discord before, so let alone opening these tools there. There's just so much that people can already do, let alone the bespoke technology that's being built on these large language models. So many different platforms are using other language models for chatbots or algorithmic matching, and it's just tip of the iceberg, really.
So with adopting generative AI, what would you say to companies then? How should they go about building a culture that would allow them to leverage such future work trends?
Absolutely. Well, and let's kind of riff off of the generative AI topic as well, is like we need to stop looking at a lot of these things as cheating, right? You think about people who are applying for jobs or who are filling out forms and doing other stuff, and now recruiters are even going, if you're a bot, then please say bleep bloop and add a robot, so they can tell if someone's made generative AI based off of a job post and not even read it. And really, the people who are going to be innovator companies are the ones who are going, aha, how do I encourage someone to use these things to enhance their work or increase productivity and do all these other things? So people who are like, this is cheating, like the purists of human-based work, they're going to get leapfrogged over. This is a real opportunity for people who are going, I see the opportunity. I see all the things. Maybe they're not going to go 100% automated with everything in AI, which we're not there yet with the technology, anyways, but encouraging people to enhance their work or speed up their work or even just branch out even further from their skill sets, these are the companies that are really going to win. And that's the culture that you have to instill, is like work smarter and like go
Yes.
for it.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I love how you phrase it in terms of cheating, because I have heard that as well. And I've heard a lot of companies who are quite worried and apprehensive about the use of, as you said, the bots and ChatGPT, because as you rightly put it, they do kind of interpret it as cheating rather than I like to see it as leveraging, because you're freeing up so much of your talent's time to do a lot more important things and problem solve within your company.
Absolutely. And there's a real big difference too, right? Of automation and augmentation. And I think people are going, someone's not actually doing any work at all. They're just going to automate their role, and I'm going to have, rinse and repeat content that everyone's going to have, for example. But when we're talking about augmentation, it's really what you and I are discussing, which is how do I work, free up my time to work on important problems that need solved rather than writing a brief, right? So this is where we need to go.
Yeah, and I think it should be a relief for employees. You have a lot of companies that have, because of cost of living crisis, because of other environmental shocks, that have been forced or took the route, I should say, of shedding their workforce. So where you have employees that are left behind, who are feeling the pressure of doing three people's work instead of one, you can now take some of that pressure off employees. Or hopefully hire more people, but I mean, it does present an opportunity to reduce the pressure within the workforce.
Absolutely. I mean, it's reducing pressure in terms of, all of the amount of tasks that I need to do, but it is adding pressure in other ways. Like we talk about what type of skills are required from that individual now. This is such a huge theme, right? Because before, I could be really good at data entry or making pivot tables, and now you don't need to do those tasks. And on the one hand, it's a lot easier because I can just ask, Copilot within Excel to do these things. But on the other, we have to think about the impact within people and teams when you take away mundane tasks, because sometimes it is just so peaceful to sit down and do some data entry where you don't have to really think super hard about what the problem is or how you can permutate that into different prompts, right? So you need to have a mix of different types of work that people are able to do. And if we take away all the stuff that is maybe peaceful or slow or repetitive, we're also kind of changing the intensity of work that people have, right? It takes a lot of brain power and emotional power to do these things still.
Totally agree. I think it also raises that debate of one, reskilling, but also whether or not, similar to what you're saying, if the intention is to replace workers with these things, because I do believe there's a place for all types of work. It does also shore up that issue of workers also having to have a continuously learning and evolving mindset so that they don't feel the pressure in terms of being replaced. I shouldn't say the pressure, I should say the threat. There's often this threat of these things will replace us. And these tasks still have to get done, but where we continue to evolve and continue to learn in the process, I don't think there will ever be a case where these things can ever fully replace human work.
Not right now, no. I think not all roles are created equally either. You know, some roles are just absolutely not at risk of being impacted by AI, but a lot of the world that we're living in, talking about remote knowledge workers, like, yeah, there's maybe a little bit more of pressure there. But one thing I think about too is, you know, we think about software developers and continuous learning and keeping up with technology has always been just such a large part of that culture as an industry, because one moment a framework is really hot, the next it's not, and suddenly you're out of work. So you're always keeping up with new ways of working. And I think that mindset and kind of joke being with being a software developer is you don't really need to know how to code, you need to know how to research things. So like you're on Stack Overflow and looking it up. This is really what the rest of the workforce is going to start doing, is I'm going to get really good at finding the right information. I'm going to get really good at writing the prompts. And this is what's going to keep me on top of my learning and on top of my skill set, is if I can develop these kind of evergreen skills. Some people might even call them soft skills when we talk about interpersonal working and all of that. But those are really the ones that are going to help you continue to grow in a more kind of frictionless fashion.
And I think this is a the perfect point to smoothly segue into this idea of creating a more competency and skills-based workforce rather than, what we would have been traditionally used to, which is a job-based approach, having our work defined within specific job roles. But more and more we're hearing people advocating, myself included, to make sure that we have companies that take a more of a skills-based approach in order to preserve their competitiveness and the ability for their employees to more easily evolve.
Yeah, absolutely. And not to get like too preachy about it, but I hate jobs and roles. I just think that, like, when was the last time you applied for a job and the job description was truly accurate to what the job was? They're out of the date, or they change, or, you know, maybe someone needed one role and now we've gone through changes as a company or had new opportunities, and what happens next? So one, I think the existing job role dynamic is just fundamentally broken. You kind of force people to progress through certain stages, and that's just not how career paths work. So I'm loving this trend of skills-based hiring, which is basically going, you know, almost like the projectification or taskification of work. I have this thing that needs done, and these are the skills that I need to do them. And it doesn't matter if those skills are on this team or even in-house with me. I can hire a freelancer, I can hire a vendor or an agency, or I can bring someone over from another team who can help with this skill at this time. And one of the reasons I love it is it creates internal mobility. It allows for more choice. It allows people to play to their strengths rather than having to fit into a mold. But it also allows more freelancers and adoption of freelancers, because here's a very clear, discrete scope of work that I need your specialized skills. And now you can kind of come in a little bit more interchangeably. So I think skills-based hiring is going to help employee satisfaction, but it's also going to accelerate adoption of freelancing and contracting.
Yeah, I fully. Well, I'm biased in that area already
I
because of the
know.
type of work that I do. But I'm going to take a step back just for our audiences because I think you raise a good point in terms of skills-based hiring, skills-based approach. But just for those who might not be fully clear, can you tell us the difference between what we mean by a job-based work versus skills-based work?
Absolutely. Well, job-based work really is kind of that format of employment that we're used to. I see a job description that says, this is what your role as a VP of marketing is. And you come into the job as a VP of marketing, and you're responsible for everything that was listed within your area and your function. And really, you're on one specific career trajectory and path. I would probably want to get promoted into a CMO style of a role for an exa as an example, and manage people who are marketing managers within. And so it is much more boxed in a particular in a traditional job and role environment. Now, skills-based hiring is different. It's okay, what are all of the skills and competencies that I have as an individual in almost like a tagged manner? I have very high proficiency in writing copy, perhaps as that VP of marketing. But instead of the VP of marketing, I focus on the fact that I'm good at copy, or I focus on the fact that I'm really good at storytelling, or that I'm a really great designer. And these particular skills themselves of doing the tasks, that's really what we focus on. So not having to fit within certain boxes on teams or within companies, but going, you know, Erin's really good at this one thing and this 10 things, and that's how we're going to kind of move her around into different roles.
Absolutely. What do you think then? Because you mentioned before about that helping in terms of companies being able to work with different types of talent, like you mentioned independent contractors, you mentioned freelancers. What do you think then? How can about the skills-based approach and how it can support work innovation?
Yeah, I think we're going to see a lot more companies have internal talent pools. So basically, this is a list of kind of either trusted external contractors and freelancers that you maintain a relationship, whether or not you have a project for them or not, but also just cataloging all of those skills in a very data-backed manner that you currently have within your organization. So I think culturally, we're going to see this shift of, okay, how do I have really high engagement and employee satisfaction or worker satisfaction? And like, what is that employee experience like for both contractors and in-house employees? So I think that's going to be a major shift. But when we start looking at internal talent pools and having catalog skills and engaged and ready workers, we can move a lot more quickly and we can kick things off, which is such a massive part of basically having innovation, right? It's about speed and ability to move and adapt to new learnings. And Upwork had a really great report on innovator companies as well. So you can check out that in the Upwork Research Institute. But work innovator companies were 2.6 times more likely to know what work is better suited for freelancers. And it lends itself to knowing which skill sets are basically kind of this projectification, right? How do we do skills-based work? And then how does that basically lend itself more to freelancers?
Absolutely. I think there's so much to be learned. There's still so much around this area that I think is very new. And we know that we've seen firms in the past that have taken up skills-based approach and is they've reported their success on it. It's sort of taking a competency route, let's call it MasterCard being one of them, who they purported more than 200 million in productivity to take in a skills-based approach. So can you tell us a bit more? Because I know you continue to write in this area, and I know you have a weekly publication. Is it Weekly Workforce? Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's weeklyworkforce.com for anyone who wants to like and subscribe. And really, it's an outlet for me to talk about all of these random brain wormholes that I like to go down and thinking about what would happen in the world if we had this one change. The other thing is, I'm just an avid internet reader. So I like to do massive summaries of different things. I watched all of the Davos Growth and Jobs reports and I summarized them, for example, from World Economic Forum. So I pick a topic and do a ton of research and share that in an easily digestible manner with everyone in their inbox every Sunday.
Awesome. Yeah, I've been enjoying reading it because it really keeps me up to date. And there's so much to keep up to date on. I mean, we know that one thing that
Sure.
is constant is pace, the pace of change that's just kept accelerating and kept accelerating. So I do really appreciate that
Yes.
copy.
Yeah, no shortage of things to write about, that's for sure.
Absolutely, absolutely. What do you think? And I'm going a little bit wider here. So we speak a lot about what companies can do. We speak about what individuals can do in terms of supporting new ways of working. What about wider society? So for example, what about governments and those who, let's say, govern employment regulations and these sort of areas? Where do you think they should be looking?
Absolutely. I think, you know, when we talk about governance in general, it's always a bit of a big, hairy problem because as the workforce gets more and more distributed internationally, this also gets much more complex. So I think a lot of different companies are really trying to do a focus on employment classification and how this works because it's a fine balance between I want to have enough structure and rules and regulations in place that workers can't be taken advantage of. So, I have someone who maybe looks and smells like an employee, but I'm not going to give them health benefits. I'm not going to give them paid time off, all these things that really should be protected as workers' rights. But we also don't want to go all the way the other side of being too prescriptive, where we eliminate the ability for people to easily become self-employed and easily be a contractor or a freelancer. Things like, gosh, did I just tiptoe across a threshold and suddenly I have to pay into different dividends, or I'm in a different tax bracket, or all of a sudden I'm unable to make certain claims on, housing benefits or, childcare and so on and so forth. So I think a lot of different governments are trying to figure it out. We have IR35, that's a very hot topic here in the UK. There's the kind of new EU platform directive for platform and freelance workers that basically tiptoes around all different types of things with employment classification. Lots of hot debate on it. I continue to report on it regularly because it's such a changing landscape. But I think if we think about it in those two polarities of how do we create, enough structure that we support people to be independent, but also protect workers.
Yeah, exactly. And we often hear a lot about creating common language, and I know that's one of the issues that makes it quite difficult to navigate. So I do hope that that is something that we can get around in the future through that sort of collaboration between the freelancers, between wider society, and between organizations, because the world of work is marching forward. It's moving, things are changing, and I think we should be open to that. So yeah,
Yeah,
fingers crossed.
absolutely. Yeah, and it's such a personal thing too when you get into language. Like to some people, like gig is a dirty word, right? So we could go down so many avenues with this.
Yeah, even digital nomads. I found that out too in my own research that some people, they don't like being called digital nomads. I'm fine with the term, but I know other people, they don't like it.
Exactly. So it's tough when you're going, will we ever really have a unified language when, everyone's experiences are so unique? I don't really know.
Yeah, exactly. There's no one answer. We're not gonna get there overnight.
Right.
Well, thank you so much, Erin. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for all of the knowledge that you shared with us. And we're going to continue reading your weekly workforce digestive, because it is really a good just condensed version of getting our heads around everything that's happening in the new world workspace as we speak. But just before we go, can you tell us a little something personal about yourself? So when you're not working, what would you say is your favorite thing to get into?
Yes, well, it's but maybe listeners don't know. I have a dog. He's sleeping next to me here. He's very lazy, but we mostly are getting out and exploring different parts of London, walking a lot. I also crochet and do lots of like old lady crafts, and I'm a real sucker for a really good like just reality TV binge. So
We're so opposite in that area. I am so like anti-reality TV. But
I
I
love
notice
it.
people love it. Yeah, absolutely. But then my weak point then is Lifetime movies. I know they're absolutely crap,
Oh,
but
I can't because I just, they're so predictable. At least with
yes.
reality TV, you're like, what just happened?
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's true, actually. Yeah. But anytime I don't feel like thinking, I put a Lifetime movie on. I'm like, I just want to zone out. Just put some Lifetime movie. And I think that's reality TV for a lot of people.
It's like good background noise. You don't really have to pay that much attention because it's not that important.
Exactly. Well, thank you
Yeah.
so much, Erin. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for everything that you shared with us. And where can our audiences find you if they wanted to reach out to you for the type of work that you do, or anything interesting, or speaking engagements? Where could they find
Absolutely. Feel free to find me on LinkedIn, or you can always drop an email. It's Erin, Eryn, at startupconsortium.io.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And thank you for our audiences for joining us for another episode of Remotely Speaking Up. We will see you next week. And of course, if you want to know more about a podcast, you can find us at Remotely Speaking Up on Instagram. And if you want to explore the world of work and how it can impact your company, or you want to know where to start on that journey, feel free to reach out onto LinkedIn, drrochellehaines.com, and we can have a chat. All right, take care, and hopefully we'll see you joining us next week again. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
I hope you enjoyed our podcast series. To find out more, follow us at Remotely Speaking Up on Instagram, or go to www.crowdpotential.co.uk for our services. Until next time. Hello and welcome back to Remotely Speaking Up. We are in season four, and in this episode, we have with us Florian Jacques from Midstay, a company that organizes retreats and other events for remote workers. And what we're interested in talking about today is how we build those communities for remote workers and how it helps them as well in delivering their objectives. So, Florian, welcome to our podcast and thank you for joining us. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hey Rachel, thanks for the invite. So sure, as you just said, my name is Florian. I'm coming from Belgium initially. And just for the quick story, I was and I am still UX UI designer, but the role has been evolving as now I'm the co-founder and CEO of the company. And yeah, for the last 4 or 5 years before COVID, I was working as a UX UI designer in San Francisco, in New York, in Australia, in many startups. And I wanted to be very close to them to just, understand the dynamic of a startup and all the ecosystem around it. And then basically it happened that early 2020, I took a flight to go to Bali in February 2020. And a month after COVID hit, so I basically got stuck in paradise. And yeah, so I mean, I stayed there for, instead of staying 2 months or three, I stayed actually 18 months. After 7 months, I met my co-founder, Magnus, who was a proper digital nomad that has been traveling for many years before and was really traveling and working at the same time. On my side, I was basically doing mission in different startups in more corporate cities, San Francisco, New York, etc. And all the time I was moving every 3 to 6 months. So I was not a proper digital nomad, but I also had these frictions of traveling and working and some challenges of relocating, recreating the social bubble around me whenever I was moving with my work. So this is basically the frictions we shared with Magnus, my co-founder. And for a small story, we were at that time, we were actually surfing from 6 to 8 a.m. It was a day with no waves that day. So we started talking in the water, and then basically the venture started from there. So with Magnus, we were actually meeting in the water. It was a day where, we are surfing from 6 to 8 a.m. in the morning before starting our day of work. We didn't know each other at that time. We actually met in the water. It was a flat day, so no waves at that in that morning. So we are just, sharing and speaking to people around us. And I got to meet Magnus, my co-founder, in the water, sharing the experience as well and the frictions we had of traveling and working at the same time. And we wanted to come up with a solution that we are basically providing different tools for our remote workers to relocate and connect with other interesting people around them.
Wow, I like the fact that you met in the water and that you're stuck in paradise. You're stuck in paradise for 18 months. That sounds like a really tough life.
It was. No, actually, it was quite of a, a joker. We didn't really know, I would say a bet, because we didn't really know how it would turn out, right? At that time, we didn't know how COVID will be. But that's for sure. All my friends in Brussels were telling me, Flo, just stay there because it's so bad here. And indeed, in Bali, we were still able to surf. That's how I met my co-founder. And I was working for my clients from there. So it was just easy to stay there. And then just it happened that we created Midstay, the startup from that experience.
Wow. So what do you see then as, because you mentioned that there were a lot of pain points and a lot of frictions in the remote work community, and that's where you got the idea. What do you see as the key frictions that you guys needed to solve? What are some of those pain points?
So it's quite interesting. At the very beginning, we thought that relocating was one of the main a pain point, because you were wasting time when you're arriving in a new place. So at V1 of Midstay was really a platform, a tech platform, where we were integrating different local services to connect new people in the hub to get faster to the local services. We quickly understood, after more than 1,000 users, after 6 months, that actually the people on the platform that was only in Bali were actually coming on the platform to connect with other people around them. So they were using our single social feature we had on the platform. And we quickly basically switched into this model where we clearly know Midstay is a platform where we connect people beyond screens. So we want to beat isolation that remote work is actually bringing. We know that it brings a lot of benefits, less commute, a lot more flexibility and all that. The one big thing is that there is more and more people feeling lonely because of remote work. They have lost their colleague environment. They have lost their office, that rhythm where you go every day. And either you're going as a hybrid or remote first. This is the main thing that comes out of it. The main pain point is that isolation feeling. And that's why Midstay is providing two solutions. On the B2C, we are actually providing a self-serve platform where people can join for free and connect with other people in the same situation around them. On the B2B side, we enable any companies to bring the whole team together in a team retreat.
Well, I think you're right, because often we advocate remote work, and it is a great option, especially if you're going to do half-half, let's say remote work and hybrid work. And I guess hybrid work is one way of solving some of those pain points. But isolation is definitely something that's always come up among digital nomad communities and remote workers. And I think it's quite good how you're trying to solve that specifically. Can you give us an example of some of the events that would help to solve that?
So clearly, we have like different, you know, packages and angle to actually solve that. But most of the time on the B2B side, what we do is that first we take a call with a client and we ask, what's the goal to bring these people together? Is that actually to solve, you know, sometimes it's cultural barriers, some, you know, lacking in terms of communication, a lot of things like you can do. We do also for leadership summit, we do for annual planning, we do for employee onboarding sometimes as well. So it really depends on what the goal and the needs of the company. And then we come up with a tailored package for the company to make sure that they are not having that as a cost, but as an investment for them to have outcome, you know, positive outcome for the business afterwards.
Yeah, and I think the big one you mentioned there was onboarding. I know a lot of companies that work with, the big problem that they face is that providing the right tools that the remote worker needs, providing the right access, and also communication issues. Sometimes the wrong messages are sent. And I feel just having a very clear onboarding session where sometimes, yes, you get all the people in the room physically, you make sure that it's understood at the beginning what support is there to provide for remote workers. So that's kind of what you do in your process, I'm assuming.
Yeah, totally. That's clearly what we actually also found out as one of the identification from all the analysis we did since many months. You know, and that's actually quite interesting because it's a market that is growing and that is quite new. I mean, it's very new that people were stuck at home and that actually they really liked it and that didn't want to come back at the office, and that companies had to, you know, make some choice and employees had to come back at some point, but they didn't want, so they were losing, you know, like they were moving out of that company to find a better opportunities where companies were allowing that remote work. So it's very interesting because it's very new and a lot of things are still to be discovered, but we are also, as we know that, we are very flexible in a way we're building the startup. A lot of things are still on the move. We are seeing some companies asking the employees to come back, but does this company will still be, you know, competitive on the market to recruit the best talents? That's one of the best questions as well we see most of the time. So clearly this is a competitive advantage for companies once they offer that benefits, but then it brings challenges and then they need to be aware of that. And that's where we come up for solutions that allows them to go through these barriers, most of the time, thanks to some team retreats we organize. And companies are not only actually investing that every year. We see some team departments doing that every quarter, every 6 months. And for the whole company, most of the time, the annual retreat is the whole team, and that's every year.
I think you said something that is so important, the fact that it's still all very new. And I think the pandemic, because that accelerated people working remotely, and people just were doing that overnight. I think sometimes, although we kind of reset into what was the norm before, we forget that it actually is very new for a mass amount of people to work remotely. For some companies, no, let's say some remote work companies, but for the general average company, it is still something very new, and companies are still figuring it out. They're still making mistakes. And that's where companies like yours come in to kind of help navigate that process.
Yeah, totally. And you know, like we're speaking a lot about companies, but let's not forget about remote workers. I mean, they became remote workers, but let's not forget about the workforce itself.
Yeah.
And not only the one that are, I would say, above 45, 50 years old that are actually also maybe not as you know, native in terms of technology as the Gen Z and the millennials, but as well, the people that were out of uni and that just start the first work without going at the office, without having a mentor, as a lot of people had when starting their career. So there is a lot of challenge on that side as well, where you were, you know, mentioning it just earlier, that one of the biggest challenges for companies that are remote is the onboarding. And, you know, there is a lot of tools now that allows us to make it async, but we need to be educated and to be organized in a way that all our tools are actually solving these things. And I think that's very interesting as well. We're also most of the time providing, you know, some advice for these companies after the retreat to keep the bond they actually created during these few days of retreat. And that's also what they like, because there is like really a follow-up afterwards and making sure that they can keep this, you know, momentum with people and keeping that interaction going.
Yeah. And what you mentioned there as well, the fact that there are different types of digital nomads that have different needs at different points in time in the work process. I think that's really important too, to remember as you are onboarding, as you are preparing your communication tools, not every remote worker needs the same thing. So it's really important to have your organizational leaders understand that if they're going to move forward with any kind of planning.
Yeah, that's for sure. And then now if we go back to these digital nomads, the ones that are moving from one place to the other, right? Actually, one for sure we see more and more coming up. We see as well this trend of like people doing slow mads, so the ones that are moving more, I would say, every 2 to 5 months. The digital nomads are really the ones that are moving every week, 2 weeks, and that are really like moving from one place to the other, right? And for them, it's for sure like the product of Midstay in terms of B2C, so the app itself is really made for them and the one that are slow mad, because in a way that you are really, the whole experience is around your stay. So you can say you're currently in Paris. We're going to show you and generate you people around you that are interesting people that you could meet for a coffee, that you could meet for lunch, that you could meet for an after work, and that basically recreate your colleagues' interactions that you have at the office, and that you can just stop by the coffee machine and have a quick talk, or that you can, you know, just plan an after work with your colleagues. And these are things that you're losing if you're not having your issue in your city, and that actually you got hired by a company that is maybe in Texas and you're currently in Paris.
Yeah, we need to be really honest about that. Like, I mean, I'm an advocate of remote work, but it is very true that with remote work, you do lose some of those office networks and collaborations, which are quite important, I guess, for someone else starting their career. So if you can build that in different locations, kind of like a virtual cooler on the move, or a network opportunity on the move, then I think that those persons who are considering remote work don't feel as disadvantaged.
Yeah, that's exactly where we are actually looking to go. That's the vision of Midstay, and I'm quite happy that you capture it very well.
Oh, thank you. So what do you think companies should do to try to encourage more engagement when they do work with digital nomads, or when they are switching to remote working? What should they be trying to do to engage their people more?
That's a very nice question. I think people engagement is the main topic these days because of remote work. You know, managers and CEO founders are quite worried, the ones that were not ready for remote work, because people are not at the office anymore. They cannot tap at their back, and they can, you know, like, it's very hard for them to follow up if they are not having the tool there for making sure that they can track or monitor in a way. People engagement has been a very big topic for us this year, because we've been releasing an ebook that is all around that. So actually, that's something that I can even give you the link and to share it with your community, because we've been releasing that ebook for free, and more than 200 companies have been downloading it so far. It's been the 2 months that we've been releasing it. And we've seen indeed that a lot of people were interested, and the part two is actually going to be released in 1 month. We are giving a lot of tips, different techniques as well in terms of NPS for employees. It's actually called ENPS, employees NPS. And we have different ways of bringing, for sure, team retreats is one of them. But we are speaking about, you know, few questions as well that you can actually ask on a weekly basis, on a daily basis, just to make sure that, you know, you check on them and that it feels like not they are robot and robot and numbers behind a screen. They're actually real human behind. On my side, as a CEO of Midstay, what I really like to do, and that's something that will happen today, tomorrow, every Thursday and every month, so it's a once every month on a Thursday, we do something called Social Midstay. And so basically that call, the whole team together is bringing on the calls. So we are 15 currently on the team. And what I like to do is that I'm taking the role as a game master, and I'm coming up with like virtual games. And for a few, like I would say 30 to 45 minutes, we are coming up together. with not speaking about work at all, and just, you know, like starting to learn from each other, starting to learn the interests, starting to, you know, bond together, even if it's through screens. I think these things are quite important, because for sure having a budget for a team retreat is not possible every month. So these things are actually, you know, initiatives that I felt were really working. And one of the nicest game I did recently, actually, was something called Guess the Handwriting. You know, we are a remote worker. We don't know how our employees are writing, right? So it was quite interesting. So I was just saying, look, just write all the same thing, all the same sentence on the paper. The sentence will be, let's go mixte. You take a picture, you send me on Slack individually, and I'm going to send it on the general Slack channel, and everyone needs to guess who was behind this handwriting. And that was super interesting, you know, because at the end, even myself, I was very surprised that, you know, some graphic designer in the team was not the one that were having the best handwriting. It was maybe the software engineer that were the nerdest one of the team. And so it was super interesting to really see that. And then actually also employees trying to guess and trying to say, oh, okay, this is actually because of the personality. And so that was creating many more connections, actually. And I really liked it.
Yeah, I bet you if you had a doctor in the crowd, you would have picked up the handwriting right away, just because
we don't have any.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. I like that. And I like the fact that you separated it from work. You know, you've made that hard line that no, we're not going to be talking about work, because I do know that there, I've seen leaders in the past try to create that sort of engagement by having those extra one-on-one meetings with remote workers, but it often turns into an information session rather than a get to know you, let's really connect.
Yeah, that's clearly something we should avoid. I mean, if you come up with that topic and title in the meeting call and that says social meetste, and that turns out to be actually something where the leaders are trying to get work out of the call, that's, to me, that's the biggest mistake to avoid.
Yeah, it defeats the purpose completely. And then there's an issue of trust as well. You're no longer giving people a reason to trust you or to want to engage with you if they feel like you're constantly checking up on them as well.
Yeah. But you know, it actually become quite a challenge on this days. It's been maybe like a year we're doing this call every month. So it's been already almost 12 time we do it. And I'm always doing two games in each of the calls. And tomorrow, like I'm telling you in advance, I will do a scavenger game. So basically they will need to hunt around them like objects that I'm going to tell them. So the first one that will bring a pen on the camera, or the first one that will bring a bottle in the camera. And so we actually did this one the very first time we did it, and we were much less in the company. So it will be interesting tomorrow to see again how this game performed. But it was one of the nicest games we also did. And we see everyone, you know, like moving from each other. And that shows as well that, you know, like, okay, you're not stuck in your chair. Like, come on, let's make the most out of it. And like, this is also about physical interaction, even though we are through screens.
Yeah, literal physical interaction. So you're also encouraging employee well-being.
For sure, we do.
Yeah, that physical activity going. So what about in general, what are you seeing? What are the trends that you are seeing as you work with companies that work with remote, or as you being a remote worker yourself? What do you see as some of the trends among, let's say, remote workers or within that digital nomadism space?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest, I would say, insights we had through the platform. So just to give you the context, the platform of Meetste on the B2C side, anyone can create a profile, and you basically have a profile that is similar to a LinkedIn, but you can add as well your feed of Instagram, you can add your lifestyle. So it's really about work and life, basically. And you can meet people that are on the same lifestyle, that are on the same interest of profession, and thanks to that, take a coffee with them. And so really going through online to offline. So that's really the mission of Meetste, is like bringing them out of their screens for a few times to make sure that they are able to recharge and then coming back better to their work through these social interactions. And indeed, we are getting we are capturing and we are gathering a lot of data thanks to the fact that we are asking a few questions. A lot of people are actually providing us a lot of data on their profile because they know that thanks to that, we can match them better with other people around them. So we're getting quite a lot of data. And on this data, what we see is that Actually, at first, we thought that most of the people will be freelancer. We see that actually we are having quite a lot of people that are employed and that are now able to work remotely. So it shows as well that there is a shift and that there is an acceptance, like the fact that clearly companies are more and more accepting this and that offer that to their employees. And these employees are, enjoying the remote work and enjoying the time on the site, things like that. So that's one of the biggest, I would say, insights we had, is that we are not at like 90%, 10% employee. We are more like 60% freelancer, 40% employed that are remote worker.
That's really interesting because you are hinting on another trend that we've observed generally, let's say within the people management space, which is that there was a recent study by Rework, which showed, it was earlier this year, and it showed that 70% of employees are thinking of leaving their companies within the next 12 months. And the reason for that, or among the reasons, is that they're not happy with the work experience and they want more flexibility. So the fact that you are seeing on your platform these employees who are working remotely, but they're still employed, it shows, it kind of hints on the fact that they're maybe wanting that flexibility, one, but also that they might also be among the ones that may leave within 12 months to go full-time remote. So we're definitely more of that.
I really love that you're bringing this, because we see as well that amongst these 40% people that are employed, doesn't mean they are remote, actually.
Yeah.
And we see as well, so one question we ask on the onboarding when you create a free account on Midstay is that we ask you, what's the goal for you on being on Midstay? Is that to meet like-minded people? Is that to, get a mentor? Is that to start a remote journey? Is that to start a digital nomad journey? So, and we see indeed that we have a lot of people that wants to learn from other people that are already in that journey how to do it. And that become kind of like, an onboarding process for them to kind of like know the tips and tricks from people that are experienced already in that journey.
Yeah.
So I think I will dig more into this. It's very interesting data that I should know more of, because knowing how many percentage are actually looking to become remote workers that are not there yet and that are employed will be a very interesting data to check for us.
Yeah, I'll be happy to share that study with you as well, because I think we're going to see more and more of it. And I like that, as you've shown from your data, that people are doing it in a smart way, because we know we had the great resignation. And then from the great resignation, we had the great rethink, where people started to doubt their decision. And then from the great rethink, then a lot of people started going back to the companies, and then companies started being quite strict. But now I think also what we're seeing is that rather than just people choosing to jump ship rather so suddenly, what they're thinking of doing is like taking a calculated risk, learning about it first, seeing if they can do it, and then slowly making a shift that is more lasting. So I think we're definitely going to, or probably you will see more of that as you continue to collect your data as well.
Yeah, that's going to be anyway super interesting, and I'm going to make sure to dig into that in the next months. But yeah, no, that's for sure. That's a very nice angle. And I'm actually even, like we always think ahead, an entrepreneur. And I'm even wondering how we can actually serve them better. These people that are trying to find information from people that are experienced, is that just the premise in the solution of Midstay to do that, or Midstay should also provide, additional tool and additional guidelines maybe for them to actually get started?
Yeah, that would be a brilliant idea. Well, we've come to the end of our session, and thank you so much, because it's been so informative, and I love just how your startup journey began on the waves during the pandemic, being stuck in a place and serving a specific pain point of remote workers. So thank you so much for sharing that for us. And to our audiences, thank you for joining us again. And if you want to know more about how to become more engaged with your remote workers, or how to create a more engaging work environment, feel free to reach out to Florian and Midstay. And Florian, how can we get in contact with you?
So through LinkedIn is quite easy. I'm quite easy to search, Florian Jacques, so Jacques in French. and happy to have a talk there. Feel free to add, and I'm always glad to meet new people.
Perfect. Excellent. And of course, if you want to know more, your company wants to know more about how to transform your organization to be more remote work friendly or more hybrid friendly, feel free to get in touch with us at Remotely Speaking Up on Instagram or contact@crowdpotential.co.uk. So thanks again and see you next week. Take care.
Thanks, Rachel.
Bye. I hope you enjoyed our podcast series. To find out more, follow us at Remotely Speaking Up on Instagram or go to www.crowdpotential.co.uk for our services. Until next time.